Two former bishops from a breakaway Mormon sect in British Columbia have been found guilty of polygamy. 60-year-old Winston Blackmore was married to 25 women and fathered more than 145 children in the tiny community of Bountiful near the US-Canadian border. His co-defendant is James Orler. He had five wives. Daphne Bramham is a columnist with the Vancouver Sun who was in court for the verdict, and she's been watching the case very closely. Welcome to RN Drive. Thank you for your time. Can you start by taking us through who these men were and the communities that they'd established?
Well, as you said in the introduction, Winston Blackmore he used to be the bishop of this community called Bountiful. It's a very small community. It's about 1,500 people in total, and it really is a place that isn't exactly a geographical location. It's really a collection of little communities, but all of them are members or have been members of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And a couple of years ago, Winston Blackmore was excommunicated, and then James Orler became the bishop of the FLDS. And then a little bit after that, James Orler also got excommunicated. So these two men have both been bishops of the FLDS, but now Winston Blackmore leads his own breakaway group, which is largely comprised of members of his own family. And when you said he has 145 children, between the trial ending and the verdict, which was on Monday, he has three more children, so he's now up to 148.
Incredible. You talk about him being excommunicated. What does that mean? Why was he excommunicated?
Well, Winston Blackmore got into a struggle, a power struggle with Warren Jeffs, and Warren Jeffs is now in jail in Texas. He was convicted a few years ago for sexually assaulting children, two or three young girls who were 12 years old who had been married to him in these celestial marriages. So Warren Jeffs won the power struggle, and in that power struggle, he actually did get rid of Winston Blackmore, because Winston Blackmore should have, by rights, been the prophet of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
There have been allegations of polygamy and sexual abuse swirling around this community for decades. Why has it taken so long to reach a verdict?
Well, one of the problems is after 1982, when Canada got a constitution and a charter of rights, there was a concern that the charter protection, the constitutional protection for religious freedom, would make the polygamy law invalid. And rather than actually take a case to court, the Attorney General decided not to do anything. He just kind of sat on his hands. And then successive Attorneys General did exactly the same thing. It was like they were afraid to take this to court. And in many ways, you know, it's still unusual that they would have decided to take a polygamy case to court, because among the evidence that was put into court for this, to get to this conviction, was a number of women who were only 15 when they were married to Winston Blackmore. The same with James Orler. One of his wives was 15. Several of them are 16. So these are plural marriages, but these are girls who, they're girls. They're not women. These by any other, in any other society, any other part of our society, this would be sexual exploitation.
Winston Blackmore never denied his polygamy. What was his defense at the trial?
Well, his defense is that he has every right to practice his religion, but unfortunately, his lawyer didn't really follow the rules, and he didn't make an application before the case began to say that he was going to do a constitutional challenge. So the case went on with kind of a place card held for what would happen, and his lawyer said then, and the judge agreed that if depending on what the verdict was, that Mr. Blackmore would then be able to do a constitutional challenge. So sometime this fall, I expect that we will have a constitutional challenge. And what his challenge is that he does have a right to practice his religion. He will probably argue that he has a right to freely associate. And he's also going to argue that because for so long there were no charges laid, that he felt that he had every right to do it, because he felt that the Attorney General had basically ceded to the fact that the law was unconstitutional.
One of the key witnesses in the trial was Jane Blackmore, one of Winston Blackmore's wives. Why was her evidence so important?
Well, it's important, first of all, because she was Winston's first and only legal wife. She's also a half-sister to James Oler, and she was a midwife in the community. So she knew almost all of the wives that were listed on the indictment for Winston Blackmore. I think there was one or two that actually were married to Winston after Jane left and divorced Winston. But she had this intimate knowledge. She lived with lots of them. They were her so-called sister wives. But because she was also a midwife, she had access to other records. So she was able to talk about the births. But the other thing that was very valuable is that because she was raised in the same household as James Oler, she could talk about what they were taught at home and what they were taught at school. She and Winston were in the same grade at school. So she could talk about all of the things that she experienced in the community, firsthand knowledge.
As we've mentioned, these men have multiple wives and hundreds of children between them. How do their families feel about this situation, about the fact that they're facing the court over this?
Well, I was checking on Facebook today, and many of Winston's children are very active on Facebook, particularly his daughters, and there's a strong sense of solidarity. They call him the greatest dad in the world, and many of them have posted pictures of them with their father. I think they share his anger. Well, he wasn't entirely angry, but he said that he was frustrated that he's being politically persecuted. And one of the things that was kind of ironic was that the day that he was convicted was in fact the day that they call Pioneer Day in Utah. It's a statewide celebration in Utah, and it's the day that the Mormons actually arrived in the Salt Lake Valley, escaping persecution and prosecution in the other parts of the United States. So the fact that he was found guilty on that day has more significance for them, and he has very much he's very much wanted to be seen to be the true leader and someone who will stand up for his religion, and that's what he talked about outside the court, and that's what his lawyer talked about in court, that I am doing this is my religion, I've never been anything but this, I would never deny my religion, and he would have been disappointed had he not been found guilty of being a true follower of his religion.
I understand that Bountiful was established near the US-Canadian border exactly for the reason of trying to avoid basically being detected by authorities from either side or face police questions and the ultimate court cases that we've now seen. Is that the history of why they've been set up on that border?
Oh yes, they chose a place that was quite remote. They also chose the interesting thing about this Creston Valley where they're located. It's very much it's a community where everybody just wants to be left alone. Which is not to say they're not very nice. They're very nice people there, but they really have that whole live and let live kind of spirit. They don't stick your nose in my affairs. I don't really care what you're doing. And they see them, and they see Winston's people in town. The people who are still in the FLDS don't go into Creston very much, but they see Winston all the time. He's quite a charming guy. His children are quite beautiful. They've got very good genes. They're very, very handsome boys and very good looking girls, and they look healthy. And so a lot of the people in Creston they've never said anything, but where they located, there's actually a trail through the mountains, through the Skimmerhorn Mountain, and you could run across. It's 3 miles across the border. You could easily get through the border without ever having to go on a road.
Mr. Blackmore's lawyer is planning to challenge Canada's polygamy laws. Is there a chance that could be successful?
Well, you know, I've been doing this story for a very long time, and every time that I think that I know what's going to happen, I'm almost certainly wrong. So I would never say that it's not possible that he could win. At this point, I would say that having seen a draft of the application that he's filed, I don't think it's a very good case. But I think the interesting question now is for Canada and for the province of British Columbia, if what they're trying to do is to stop this community from growing and to stop the practice of polygamy, I think it's a very interesting question whether by going after Mr. Blackmore and Mr. Oler for polygamy as opposed to what we think are the harms of polygamy, which is underage marriages, abuse of children, lack of autonomy for women. I think by going after him for polygamy and the issue of religious freedom, I think we may very well find that that the state has pushed more people into his camp because they actually think that maybe he should have a right to do what he wants in his own bedroom.
What's been the reaction to this case in Canada? Are people shocked?
Well, it's been going on for so long. I use my mother as kind of a test, and she said, "Well, people are just tired of it," she said. So I think in Canada there's a bit of, "Yes, can we just get this over with?" It's been interesting to me that there's been so much attention internationally to this case, and so that's been a bit of a surprise to me.
I suppose there is an interest because, you know, these communities are, well, they have been certainly depicted in fiction, in Hollywood. I mean, there is an interest in these kinds of communities and how they exist in defiance of the law. How many of these communities, how many people exist in these kinds of communities in Canada?
Well, the community that we know, that we best know, is Bountiful, I would say there are about 1,500 people, give or take a few, because some are coming and going, like some have left recently. But there are other little outposts as well. So there are a couple of little groups in Alberta, but nobody talks about them. I've never been to those communities. They're scattered around in Canada. There's another group that's again a breakaway kind of more fundamentalist Mormon group in Ontario, but they're very small, and there was a prosecution on different charges than polygamy, and it seems to have sort of faded a bit. But for the most part, Bountiful is it in Canada, at least what we know of. But, of course, the only other group that practices polygamy has polygamy as part of their religious tenet is Islam. And recently we've had a large number of Muslims coming to Canada. So there is a concern among some people that there may be more people practicing polygamy who are within the Muslim community here.
Daphne, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Daphne Bramham there. She's a columnist with the Vancouver Sun who was in court for this verdict, a really intriguing case out of Canada.